You're listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All right, Griffin. Here, now go back, Your Honor. Thank you. Please be seated. Okay, we're back on the record. Mr. Pryor, you can continue with your voir dire examination.
Before I get into a different topic, do any of you folks know each other? Nobody knows each other? And again, remind me, in terms of media viewing, how many of you have seen anything on the, whether it's the internet, TV, anything like that? Could you raise your cards if you've seen anything? Okay, thank you. One of the instructions that the courts want to give you is that it talks about what a conspiracy is. And the state talked a little bit about that. Prosecuting attorney, I think, but please forgive me, I believe it was Ms. Blake, talked to you folks a little bit about that. And one of the things in order to have a conspiracy per the court's instructions, and this is what the judge is going to give you as rules, okay, is that there needs to be an agreement. There needs to be an agreement. Is there anybody who doesn't understand what an agreement is? Okay. Juror number 219. Sorry. How do you define what an agreement is?
Define without using the word agreement. Basically, you're understanding the same thing. An individual that you are working with on.
Juror number 11, we haven't picked on you, but I apologize if we picked on you. Okay, that's okay. But what do you think an agreement is? How would you define an agreement?
I would define an agreement as two or more parties formally agreeing to something or seeing like one another and formally, you know, planning something together.
Is there anybody who disagrees with that? How about hands of showing me anybody who agrees? Hands or cards, whatever you feel. So if I understand it, 394, did you put your card up or hand up? I'm sorry. Okay. So you think that there needs to be a formal arrangement. How is that arrangement set out? Is it in words to each other saying, we agree that this is what we're going to do? Is that how that you reach a formal agreement?
I think it varies. Based on the situation, I think it can be formal, it can be verbal, nonverbal, just depends on the situation.
Okay, but there has to be some, I don't want to use fancy words, but I tend to speak very simply. It has to be some kind of a statement or something that says, yeah, we're all in on this, right? Juror number 27, what are your thoughts on that? I'm the one who struggles with technology. Right.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think based on what you're coming to agreement of, there might be different protocol.
Okay.
But I believe your word is your word, regardless of what that protocol is.
Okay.
So if you're coming to an agreement, then you are to agreement. That's your word. That's your contract, essentially.
Okay. And we're going to work our way down to juror number 31, and she's smiling. She looks like she's ready to let me know her opinion, so I'll give you this chance.
It's a nervous smile.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you're too nervous, we can pass the mic on. In fact, folks, if it gets to the point where you're too nervous and you just don't want to say anything, this is like a game. Just pass it on to the next person.
I'm okay. It's the thing that I don't... an agreement... I think too as verbal, but sometimes it's a written agreement.
Okay.
Not necessarily I agree to that or agree, because even though you say it, doesn't mean it's for sure.
Right.
Or if it's written down, a signature or something, that I feel like you can't get out of that agreement now.
So people are just talking about topics. That doesn't necessarily mean it's an agreement, does it?
No.
There has to be some, and I'm going to use a fancy word because I'm surprised to you, I went to law school. And the one thing they do to us is they try to put fancy words in our mouth. So I'm going to use this fancy word, then I'm going to ask you to maybe explain it in what I think are simpler words. But they say you have to manifest a desire to agree. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Pass it on to our friend number 41. What do you think? An agreement. What constitutes an agreement? Would you turn that on? I'm sorry. Aside from that being technologically advanced, I can't hear very well either.
So, okay. But well, everything we've all said that you agree with is between people and
okay. So you generally agree that there has to be some sort of arrangement or understanding between all of the parties that this is what you're doing. Does it have to be really clear? Or can it be, well, I'm not sure.
We approach.
Well, in the interest of time, Ms. Blake, is there an objection the state has?
Your Honor, the state's position would be he's misstating the law and what the, at least the IFG would be. In this case, of course, we don't have the specific instruction from this court, but I think he's confusing the elements of this particular offense.
At this point, Mr. Pryor, I am concerned that we're delving into court instruction here and outside of the scope of what Rule 24B permits on juror qualification. And so I would ask that we move on from definitions of what an agreement may be in the case. The jury will be instructed on that issue.
And Judge, can I respond to that objection just so we have a clear record?
Yes.
Okay. Judge, the state took some time to talk to the jurors about speaking honestly and straightforward and all of that. And I think, quite frankly, I'm allowed to go into at least what their understanding is. These folks are going to be providing jury instructions. And those jury instructions, at least from my perspective, I can ask them how they would understand and interpret that. So with all due respect to the court, I disagree with that.
All right. Well, I stand by the ruling. The instructions will clearly delineate the elements of any crimes charged in the case. The evidence may show. And I think this is going beyond the scope of proper voir dire, so if we move on to another topic, Mr. Pryor.
Is there anyone here who can promise me that they will review the entire evidence before they make a decision? Please raise your cards up. Is there anybody here who thinks that they just need to look at the prosecutor's evidence, and if they've already figured out what they feel on that, that they... They don't, it's really not necessary to listen to my evidence. Anybody agree with that? Okay. All right. Judge, I think that's all I might have at this point. I think that's all I have. Thank you, Your Honor. Folks, thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pryor. We'll move on at this point. We are going to have some individual questioning of jurors. I did want to return back around with a question or two of my own, going back to juror 296. We talked a little bit about hardship. You've raised a couple of different things. I'm sorry, sir, 394, apologies. There's you've got an important trip planned the very first week of June, is that correct? All right, you've also made some concerns about your work situation. On the June trip, I guess on each of those points, number one, I don't know that we'll have an opportunity to go back and, for example, check with employers, find out what that answer is. We'll kind of need to know today whether you're in or out potentially as a juror. So we really need to go on the information we've got now. The second point I guess I'd make is if this case is going longer than anticipated and we're getting up to June, do you believe that would become a severe distraction for you if you started thinking you were not going to be able to attend this vacation, or do you think you could possibly set that aside?
Yeah, I wouldn't consider vacation hardship. I would really focus on the case. So,
okay. I just wanted to be clear on that. So I appreciate your response on that. With that in mind, then, at this point, we are going to conduct some individual voir dire, and we've got a process. You're the first group we're doing this with, so we've thought it through, but the process will be to have jurors remain one at a time And so you'll cycle in and out of the room while we have one juror remain for this individual section of our questioning. At this point, then, we'll go ahead and start with probably the lowest numbers starting first. So juror 27 will remain for some more individual voir dire. The additional remaining jury in the panel will be excused for a moment while I talk to them, and we'll go in that order.
All right, please. All right. Yep,
I apologize. It's 11. I saw the empty seat there and thought one had been excused. Thank you. Please be seated. All right, juror number 11. We do have, I believe, a response in here. You've got some knowledge of this case previously. I don't know that you raised any concern as it relates to a possible hardship. So, at this time, I just ask for counsel, beginning with the state and then the defense, to make any inquiries you think are necessary in order to go into the issue of potential bias from pretrial exposure. Who's going to be doing that for the state?
I will be on this particular juror with juror number 11.
Okay, thank you. So, Ms. Blake, if you'd like to confine the response or your voir dire to that topic of potential bias, and then I'll allow the defense, and then we'll move on to questions on death penalty responses after that, and I'll have my own question.
And Your Honor, with in regards to juror number 11, the state's only real questions are going to be regarding hardship. We just wanted to clarify a few things, and I will indicate there was no hardship listed, just with some of the responses. We just wanted to verify a few things.
Okay, you can go ahead and inquire on whatever topics then.
Thank you, Your Honor. Juror number 11, it's my understanding you have a brand new baby, 3 months old.
Yes, I do.
And then you also work. And I know that you indicated no hardship. I just wanted to clarify with you, do you work nights?
Work early mornings.
Okay, so coming here by 8 to get started at 8:30 or maybe even sometimes a little before 8, would that create any kind of a hardship for you?
Not immediately, though.
And when you say not immediately, just so I'm clear with you, and I apologize to put you on the spot here, in not immediately, would you be good for a full 10 weeks or for the expected duration of the trial?
Yes, I can miss it.
And do you think your employer will work with you on that?
I have talked with my employer about it, and the transition will be a little difficult, but we could work out a compromise.
And it sounds like they're willing to work with you then from your conversations?
Correct.
And then with that 3-month-old at home, do you have any concerns if you were to be sequestered for a period of time?
It would be difficult being away from family, especially with a young child at home like that. But if it is required as a defensive duty, I would be able to make it work.
I just wanted to verify that with you, because I know sometimes people don't mark a hardship down because they try to compare themselves to other people's situations. So I just wanted to make sure that that was going to work for you. And then just to clarify with you, my notes from the questionnaire that you filled out was that you really didn't have any prior knowledge of this case. Is that correct?
Correct. I just heard about it in rumor.
That's all the questions that the state has. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Pryor, you can inquire on voir dire. I know there was a bit of a mention of some pre-case knowledge, as well as those hardship issues. If you'd like to inquire on those two topics, then we'll move on to questions as it relates to the death penalty.
My notes say that you saw media. Did you hear about this by way of media or not?
I came across it just looking through the news, but I never delved any deeper than glancing at it.
Okay, and please forgive me, I don't mean to delve into your personal affairs. Would it be a financial hardship for you to support your family being off for 10 weeks?
It would be difficult. I'm still communicating with my employer about their policies with jury pay, but if it was unpaid, yes, it would be a financial hardship.
And that's really what I want to get into. That you know, we all have an obligation to members of the jury that serve.
Mr. Pryor, can you move the microphone?
And I'm sorry. Is that better? Well, we all have an obligation to serve, but if it gets to the point where you feel like this is going to be a terrible financial hardship and you're going to have to struggle financially, at that point, this is not supposed to be something that imposes a significant burden on you. And what I'm understanding is that if your employer, I know your employer, I know your work, we don't need to get into that, but that employer doesn't pay you for more than a week, this is going to be a significant financial burden on you, isn't it?
Yes, it would.
And it's going to be difficult for you to make your expenses and your needs to provide for your family.
Correct.
Okay. So we're sort of banking on the fact that if your employer doesn't give us the right answer, you're going to be in a different situation. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. It does bank on what my employer does say.
Okay, and at this point, I don't need you to be noble. None of us should be noble. I feel like if someone had asked me to take 10 weeks away, yeah, I think I could do it. But if it's going to be a situation where you're going to have to, after 10 weeks, you're going to have to play catch up and you're going to have collectors and things like that, that's not being noble. I mean, I think at this point, if you really feel that this is going to be a financial hardship, if your employer doesn't give you the correct answer, I consider that a hardship. Would you agree with that?
I would agree.
Judge, I'm going to vote for cause. I think this young man is being honorable, but the reality is that he doesn't know what his employer is going to say. And quite frankly, it's going to be a financial hardship. And now's the time to resolve this rather than waiting until we get into the next round.
Response from the state on the challenge for cause?
Your Honor, with that additional explanation and information, the state has no objection.
All right. Well, turn number 11, the court will agree with counsel agreeing as well. Your attitude is very much appreciated by the court and your willingness to serve. Congratulations on your new family. I hope things continue to go well for you at work. And at this point, just given the length of this trial and your situation, it is a concern that you may face an undue financial hardship. So you will be excused and the court will support the strike for cause on a hardship basis for juror number 11. So that will conclude your jury service today. Thank you for coming up. All right. And Mr. Bailiff, if you'd bring in juror number 27 next.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you for returning here to courtroom juror 27. We're going to conduct an additional individual voir dire with you concerning issues of either bias or hardship, both of which were mentioned in the questionnaire. Although the hardship was checked as a no, and you potentially have a vacation starting June 15th, it looks like. The question of prior case knowledge is something I think we need to explore a little more outside of the presence of other jurors. So I'll begin again with the state if you'd like to conduct any additional voir dire. As it relates to pretrial publicity or bias, you can do that, and then I'll allow the defense.
And just to start, Juror 27, have you ever lived in Florida? Okay. No. And so this may seem like a strange question, but just to double check, have you ever been charged with a crime in Florida?
No, I have not.
Okay. In your questionnaire, you mentioned that you've seen some headlines.
Correct.
But you didn't really read, if I read this accurately, you just looked at the headlines and didn't really research the case.
No, I never clicked on the headlines to read any details. Just saw headlines.
So you knew that something was going on, but you didn't know the details.
Correct.
Sometimes headlines can be, for lack of a better word, loaded with a lot of information, maybe designed to make you want to read it. Was there anything in those headlines that may have biased you towards this defendant?
No, sir. Don't think I could make a judgment based on a media headline.
Okay. And so whatever you did see in those headlines, you can commit to this court and to this defendant and to people by you can set aside whatever you saw in those headlines and give this defendant a blank slate for this trial.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your Honor, I don't have any other questions on media exposure. Did the court want us to go into the death penalty section at all right now, or
later? I'll do an inquiry on that starting and then allow you questions as well. I guess the only question I had while we've got you here is the vacation starting June 15th. We're scheduled to be done at that time, but if this were running long, would that start causing you some great concern if you were potentially going to miss that?
No, there is a vacation on the 24th that would cause me concern, but the one on the 15th is flexible. It could be moved.
Okay, that's the only question I had on that. Mr. Pryor, if you'd like to inquire as it relates to bias, you can do that, and then we'll move on to questions regarding the death penalty.
And ma'am, the concern that it's much like a number of the other folks, there are four kids at home.
Mm-hmm.
And forgive me, I can't remember the ages of those kids. Are those younger kids?
My children, my oldest is 12, and then I have 10, and then I have twins who are 8.
Okay, and are you the one primarily responsible for taking care of those kids?
You could say that my husband works from home, so he is around always.
So there is some flexibility there.
There is some flexibility, yes. I homeschool my kids part-time, and they go to a program part-time, but my husband's always home, and he's very involved in the homeschool process.
So he could take over at least for 10 weeks in the homeschool. I saw that in the profile. I couldn't remember exactly what age of the children were. I saw that there was a homeschool issue, but I don't recall seeing that your husband take that over. That's something you folks could work through. Then.
Yeah, I mean, it would take some logistics and compromise, but okay. It's definitely doable.
Okay. All right, now, Judge, I don't think I have anything else. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So, juror number 27, the next topic we're going to discuss as it relates to capital punishment, which is a factor in this case. The first question I guess I'll begin with is, do you recall answering, and you do have a copy of the questionnaire there, but these questions on part 5 of our questionnaire called Attitudes Regarding the Death Penalty, do you remember answering those questions?
Yes, I do.
And to your best recollection, are all of your answers in the questionnaire still true and accurate about how you feel about that today?
Yes.
Okay. So in this case, juror number 27, it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. In this case, looking through your questionnaire, you've indicated that you are in support of the death penalty. Is that still accurate?
Sure.
I'm going to read another statement to you now. Remember, any penalty you consider should be done as if it is absolute and will be carried out in this case. Your conscientious, religious, or other objections to the death penalty are not grounds for you to be excused as a juror. Do you understand that?
I understand.
Okay. And based on your responses, would you be in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed, or would you follow any instructions given by the court as to whether or not it should be applied?
Follow the directions of the court.
Okay, so you're not saying you believe it should be imposed or you would vote for it in any case?
I do not believe that is the result of any case, correct.
All right. Having considered then the responses in the questionnaire here, the court is going to pass over voir dire for any additional questioning from the state at this time, and then I'll allow the defense to voir dire on that issue.
Your Honor, the state doesn't have any further questions.
All right, Mr. Pryor, any questions?
And Jeff, would the court prefer that I be up at the podium, or are we okay for me to sit here?
You're fine to remain seated as long as you talk into the mic.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ma'am, there's no wrong answer when it comes to people's feelings about the death penalty. everybody has an opinion, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. You can agree with that, don't you not?
I agree.
Okay. One of the areas that caused me to look at your particular profile, nothing more, but in your case, you have four relatively young children. If you were to hear testimony that related to the death of young children, would that cause you to react in a way that would say, there are children involved here, it has to be the death?
No, honestly, age doesn't. The death of anybody is sad. I don't believe that I would be affected just because of age.
Okay, and on the same token, if someone's immediately convicted of a charge such like this, is that an automatic for you for the death penalty?
No, not me personally, no.
Do you start at the death penalty and say, well, I'll look at other things, but it's been a murder, so we're starting at the death penalty and then we're going to work backwards?
No.
Okay. Judge, I have nothing else. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, I just have a final question then for your 27. So as we get into that section of the case, are you committed that you would hold the government to its proof in this case if that was the instruction you were provided?
Right.
All right, thank you. Juror number 27, you can go ahead and return to the jury room there with the bailiff, and we will next have juror number 31, Rod. All right, juror number 31 is now seated. The court's going to take just a moment to briefly review again the question. All right, the court has determined individual voir dire to be appropriate for this juror number 31. This particular juror has some knowledge of the case, which we'll discuss with you here individually. I'll allow questioning on that. There's also a potential personal knowledge of one of the participants in the trial being my staff attorney. And then in terms of hardship, there was nothing there. So I guess let's start with questioning in terms of any potential bias. And after that, we'll move on to questions as it relates to the death penalty and her responses in the questionnaire. So just as an outset, you do have a copy of your questionnaire there with you. Are all of the questions that you answered and your responses, including on the section of your attitudes regarding the death penalty, are those answers still true and accurate to the best of your knowledge here today?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, I'll allow the state to inquire first as it relates to any possible bias, then the defense, then we can move on to questions relating to the death penalty. Ms. Blake and Mr. Wood.
It's me, Your Honor.
Ms. Beatty, sorry.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Good morning. I want to talk to you briefly about some of the media exposure in this case. You mentioned in your questionnaire that you had seen this case on the news.
Yes.
Yes. And you also mentioned at one point, there was a question on page 19. Has any of your possible exposure to news reporting caused you to form an opinion about the defendant's guilt or innocence? And you had written that you weren't sure. I believe you wrote, I don't know. Can you kind of talk to me a little bit about that?
Because what I have seen and what, when this all started, I saw, I was there. But until I actually see the evidence and hear more of the background of why or why it didn't, that's when I feel like I will know more than just what I've seen on TV.
Okay. Well, that kind of leads into my next question, because you had also mentioned that you were hoping that you got to hear the correct story from them both. And so during this trial, you're going to be instructed by the judge that the state, the prosecution, has the burden of proof, and the defendant does not actually have to testify at all. That's the state's burden of proof.
Right.
And so is that something that would trouble you?
No.
Okay. And would you be able to set aside what you've heard in this case on the media and just let the defendant start with this clean slate presumption of innocence and wait until you've heard the evidence to make a decision?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And then just briefly, in the hardship portion, there was a question about being sequestered and you mentioned that you have concerns. Is that something you'd be comfortable talking a little bit about or elaborating on?
What one was that?
I believe it was on page 21, and it was a question about being sequestered. And you had written, the question was, would any potential sequestration pose an unmanageable hardship for you? And your answer had been, maybe away from home overnight, I do have concerns.
Okay. So, yeah, I didn't know. A long time away from home is just a long time from home.
Sure.
My husband's on disability, but we're just so used to doing everything together 24/7, sure. Where I just thought, gosh, weeks after weeks after weeks not seeing him, that'd be hard. But, I mean, I would do it. That was just kind of my...
And does your husband have a disability that requires you to care physically?
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't believe I have any other questions at this time, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Beatty. Mr. Pryor?
Yeah, I only have a couple of questions.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I only have a couple of questions. I wouldn't be able to do with that. I saw on your questionnaire, and I'm talking page 7, the bottom of page 7. Let me know when you're ready.
Okay.
Under part 4, number 1, question A, oh my gosh, that's a mouthful. It says, do you feel that a defendant should be required to testify? You mark yes. Could you elaborate on that a little bit just for me, just so I understand?
Answering this in last week, and then listening to the different things that they really don't need to testify, that I feel like if I heard him testify, I don't know if it'd make change my mind whether he's guilty or non-guilty. I'm aware that he probably won't say anything that I learned today. So it probably would not matter at this point.
But when you marked it...
I marked it yes.
It should be required. What I'm concerned about is not what you're hearing today. It's just that when the case is submitted to you and it's all over with, are you going to be able to look beyond that opinion of yours and say, well, I originally said I think he ought to testify because I really want to hear what he has to say. But I guess that you can understand that could be a concern.
Right.
And that's a legitimate concern. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just sort of wondering if you'd be able to look beyond that and say, okay, I don't need him to testify. I can evaluate the evidence as it's presented to me without hearing from him. Would that be fair to say?
That's fair.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And then lastly, under B, right underneath that one, you said, question was, do you feel that a defendant who does not testify is probably guilty or has something to hide? And you mark yes. So I understand you said you could look beyond that. I guess my concern is that do you still believe that if he doesn't testify, or that if any defendant doesn't testify, maybe they're hiding something or they must be guilty?
I should have put no, because reading that now, no.
Okay, and I understand
the
stress of being in these situations. You know, you're trying to get this done and you've got a million things on your mind, and maybe you just, are you suggesting you just overlooked it?
I probably didn't read it correctly.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So, and then finally, and I don't want to get on too much into your husband's disability. Would it be fair to say that you're his emotional support in terms of being home with him, and that there would be some sort of loss of emotional support for you not to be in with him for what could amount to 10 weeks, almost every day of the week, especially Saturday and Sunday. Is that going to be a hardship? I guess I really want you to be focused on this case. I really want you to take the time to read everything and be clear about what you're reviewing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm really concerned about when I hear about family members who have to struggle with disabilities, it's a terrible thing to have to deal with. I just want to make sure that you're going to be able to focus and you're not going to be overly concerned about your husband. And because this is going to be a 10-week job for you,
Right.
And it's a significant job.
Right. We're here, I understand that.
We're here on a very serious situation. I guess I want to make sure that you're going to be okay, because ultimately it really needs to be whether or not you're okay. It doesn't need to be whether I'm okay or these four prosecutors over here are okay. It really comes down to whether you're going to be okay. I just want to make sure that you're okay.
I'm okay. Yeah.
Judge, that's all I have. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. At this point then, Juror 31, I'd like to just turn to the topic raised in part five of this questionnaire, and it's titled Attitudes Regarding the Death Penalty. I'll walk through a couple of your answers with you here. You did say that you support or oppose the death penalty. You said oppose. And then, do you feel your views on the death penalty would prevent or substantially impair your ability to view the facts impartially? You said no. And the next question, would your views on the death penalty prevent or substantially impair your ability to return a guilty verdict of first degree murder, even if the state had proven its case beyond a reasonable doubt? You also said no. So in this case, it may well be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. So looking at your responses there, I'll first let you know that any penalty you consider should be done as if it is absolute and will be carried out in this case. Your conscientious, religious, or other objections to the death penalty are not grounds for you to be excused as a juror. Do you understand that statement?
Right, yes, I do.
Okay. So going back to your answer then, having thought about it, although you may be opposed to the death penalty, you've also indicated it would not prevent you from either rendering a verdict if the state proved its case beyond a reasonable doubt. Do you still feel that way?
Yes.
All right, and you've also said it would not substantially impair your ability to view the facts impartially. Do you still stand by that answer?
Yes.
Okay, so even if you have a personal view opposed to the death penalty, do you believe you would be able to set aside your own view here and follow the law and instructions given to you by the court in this case if you were instructed that you had to consider that penalty?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that will conclude the court's line of questioning as it relates to her responses on the death penalty topic. The state may inquire on that issue at this time.
Yeah.
All right, does the defense have any questions for the juror on that?
No, Your Honor, I appreciate your inquiry.
Okay, that will conclude then the individual voir dire of juror number 31. You can return to the jury room there, and we'll have the bailiffs next bring in juror number 41. All right, juror number 41 has returned for individual voir dire with the court and counsel. There's a couple of topics I'd like to begin with. Topic of hardship, which the juror mentioned of potential vacation plans May 30th, and also then some information about the case, so potentially bias based on pretrial publicity. If the state would like to inquire on those topics at this time, we'll move forward there and then see if we need to get into additional topics after that.
Before I hear you, okay?
Yes.
Bring that. I just want to call your attention. Do you have your question with you? So I might just direct you to your question. Awesome.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I've lost my voice. I'll try to stay closer. So ma'am, I'm just going to direct you to your question to kind of help us in this process. I might invite you to turn to page 20 of your questionnaire. Question. You have.
Yes.
We noticed a potential hardship in the planned vacation that starts on May 30th. Could you just explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. June 1st.
Okay, I'm sorry. We can't. Do you have the microphone with you? Apologies. We've got to pick it up on the record so we can go back later and read what you said. Thank you. Yes, if you'd explain again about your trip, please.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's a week-long trip.
We come back, we check with them first.
So with respect to that trip that you noted as a potential hardship, if you were selected to be a juror on this case, do you feel like the potential to miss that trip after your jury service goes into that planned time, is that going to be a problem for you, or is this a trip that you could rearrange or reschedule?
Yeah, I already have people. We have your own family has taken the time off vacation from work, so.
Okay. And you've actually paid out expenses for this trip
already?
Yes. Okay. You know, you need to personal, so a large sum of money you have to pay for. Excuse me. I next want to call your attention to the section of your questionnaire. I think you'll find on page 7 the deal with your knowledge of the law whenever you're there.
Yes.
So I would just like to ask you some questions about your answers that you had given on page 7. I'm actually going to go down to the bottom of the page under part 4, question E. And in that section, you were asked a question: do you believe that a person on trial who does not take the witness stand and deny the crime is probably guilty? And I believe you answered that yes. Is that right?
Some question.
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
Yes, I'm a question.
Could you explain a little bit more about what you meant by your answer?
Yes, it
says. Yeah, I can just ask in a different way. Okay. Why do you think someone is necessarily guilty just because they don't want to take this?
I really don't know. We talked about that earlier.
I'm sorry, I can't hear
that.
I'm
okay. If you could just talk, I'm sorry, and I know it's difficult. And if you need a water,
it's one.
Okay, just speak right into the mic. Right? On your response, let me just briefly, counsel. Let me switch over and let Mr. Pryor maybe ask a couple of follow-up questions on these responses on the general attitudes and knowledge of the law. And her belief that maybe somebody ought to be testifying in order to explain their innocence. So, Mr. Pryor, if you'd like to question her on that topic, I think we could maybe touch on Chase here on this.
Do I understand Mr. Wixon's not judging?
Yeah, so she's indicated she feels a defendant should be required to testify. Is probably guilty if they don't testify, and if they don't take the witness stand, is probably guilty also. And just to confirm, and again, it's fine, these are, everybody absolutely has the right to their opinions, and that is the way you feel as you sit here today, is that correct?
Well, we talked to us about that earlier. You said about that, and I was thinking about
well, and I guess the question is, do you still hold that belief that really you think someone should be required to testify in order for you to consider their innocence?
No.
All right. Well, I kind of broke things up here. Mr. Wixon, did you have anything further? And then I'll allow Mr. Pryor some additional water dye. I just want to vet out that particular issue.
Thank you, Josh. Ma'am, while we're in this topic area, there were just a couple more questions that I'd like to ask in this section. Please bear with me. It's really maybe different questions getting at the same thing, but if you were instructed by the judge that a defendant does not, under our Constitution, have to take the stand, testify, and he can invoke his right to remain silent, are you committed today that if the defendant chose to do that, that you wouldn't hold that against him?
Yes.
Right. I'd like to go ahead and draw your attention down to page 8, please. And I'm going to call your attention to question number 2, and I believe it would be C. On that question, you want to ask, do you feel that the burden of proof should be greater than proof beyond a reasonable doubt, such as proof beyond any possible doubt or proof to an absolute certainty? And frankly, I think you've got both boxes checked. Which box did you intend to check there? Fair enough. You can be. You take a moment, certainly.
Yes. It should be proved. Okay,
is that your understanding?
Yes.
Okay. And in your mind, would that be something different than proof to an absolute certainty? So if the judge gives you an instruction, understanding it can be a difficult concept. If the judge gives you an instruction as to what reasonable doubt is, and inherent in that instruction, there may be some room to not absolutely know someone's guilty, but beyond any doubt that you reasonably believe is true. If he gives you that kind of an instruction, is that something that you can follow?
Yes.
So just one last follow-up on that. So you don't require absolute unequivocal proof before you can consider whether or not someone is guilty. That's fair. And you understand that question?
Yes. Yes.
Do you have any other questions about? Ma'am, I know that there were some health related matters in your questionnaire. Can you just tell the court now, are there any health conditions that you have that you think will impact your ability to serve on the jury?
Not really. No. I have bronchiectasis, but it's not.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
I'm sorry. Bronchiectasis, but it's just a coughing and clearing the throat. It's a place. It's like, you can go for that. No. Breathing. It's just fun, but no. It's nothing that would stop me from being here.
That wouldn't interfere with your day-to-day service on the jury?
No.
Is that something that's fairly treatable? Do you take treatment for it?
It's chronic, so that's just one of those things.
Okay.
I get a little bit.
Sorry to hear that.
My time.
Nora, at this time, we would just ask that the court consider striking the jury for cause based upon her hardship with her trip. She's indicated she already has this trip. It'd be in the 9th or 10th week of the trial. That she's paid what she owes a fair chunk of money towards the trip. And so we wouldn't want her to miss her trip, lose her money, or be stuck sitting on the jury resenting the fact that she lost her trip. And so perhaps another court can say strike the cost based on that.
All right, Mr. Pryor, before you get into Bordar, then response to the state's motion to strike for cause based on the express hardship.
Judge, do I have permission not to stand up?
Yeah, you can remain seated to talk into the mic there.
Judge, I agree with the state.
I agree with the state, Judge. I think at this point, I don't want her to miss a family vacation, and I think she ought to be afforded that opportunity.
All right. Well, the state has made its motion strike based on cause. So, juror number 4-1. Courts considered your responses. I will permit you to be excused based on a hardship, given that you've already paid for this planned trip, which is very likely to overlap with our trial schedule. So we very much appreciate you coming in for your service today. Please drop your questionnaire off with the bailiff, and we will move on to our next juror. Thank you. I believe juror 4-8 will come in next.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.